This episode of the 9 to 5 Mac Security Byte podcast is sponsored by Mosel. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Mosel is the only Apple unified platform for business. Mosel's integrated approach to management and security combines state-of-the-art Apple-specific security solutions for fully automated hardening and compliance, next-generation EDR, AI-powered Zero Trust, and exclusive privilege management with the most powerful and modern Apple MDM on the market. The result is a totally automated Apple unified platform currently trusted by over 45,000 organizations to make millions of Apple devices work ready with no effort and at an affordable cost. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, and protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Mosel is more than an Apple MDM. Mosel is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mosel.com. That's business.mosyle.com. Thanks to Mosel for sponsoring the 9 to 5 Mac Security Byte podcast. Thank you for coming on the Security Byte podcast, Jeroen. I'm very excited to have you.
Oh, hey, sorry. I was going to bring that up first. Jaron is what you want to go with.
Oh, is it? I'm so sorry. Jaron. Okay.
You're fine. I'm used to that, usually stating my name first for that reason. So, but yeah, Jaron Bradley.
Hey, I'm Aaron, your host and security writer at 9 to 5 Mac. Thank you so much for tuning into the first of many episodes of the biweekly Security Byte podcast. For this very first episode, I had the privilege of speaking to Jaron Bradley. He is an author, security researcher, and director at Jamf Threat Labs. In my conversation with Jaron, which we'll get to in a second, we really discussed three main things. The first is his new book, Threat Hunting macOS, Mastering Endpoint Security. It's his second book and first one in the last 10 years. And quite frankly, a lot has changed in the last 10 years around macOS. So it was really great to be able to pick his brain about his new book, including how he got started in Apple security, a lot of the tools that he's developed over the years, like Sprite Trees, and just a bunch of really cool stories and anecdotes that he was able to share from the front lines. In addition to that, I was also able to pick his brain about the Jamf Security 360 report from 2025. And I understand that report came out in June of 2025, which in internet years feels like a millennium, but it discusses a lot of really interesting findings that I think we're going to continue to see in 2026. So I was able to ask him a lot about info stealers and adware and malware as a service business models, a lot of really great stuff that I'm excited to get into. And towards the end of the conversation, I asked him about the not so hot topic and not controversial topic at all of AI and what exactly his outlook is for AI in 2026, concerns that he's seeing, and not just concerns around AI taking IT professionals' jobs, but AI in the hands of threat actors, because this is something real that we're seeing. Just recently, I wrote a story on Mosel finding one of the first ever examples of AI-assisted malware, Mac malware, in the wild. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Jaron Bradley. Well, with that out of the way, thank you so much for coming on the Security Byte podcast, Jaron. I'm super excited to have you here to talk about macOS security.
Yeah, super excited to be here. Thanks for the invite.
So you just came out with a new book, Threat Hunting macOS, Mastering Endpoint Security. Do you want to give the listeners a little brief and how it came to be?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to. So I came into the Mac field sometime, probably around 12 years ago or something like that. Essentially there wasn't much material to learn on when it came to the security side, and the threat hunting side, short of a lot of maybe blog posts that were created in sort of forensics forums that existed. But I found a bit of passion in, trying to kind of research these things that people weren't talking about too much, and trying to make some of that material public for others to learn off of, so that there didn't have to be so many, not so that all the time that I spent learning these things, others didn't have to spend the same, right? And so that was kind of the goal. You know, I've had two books go out, and this is the second attempt of sort of taking what I've learned over the years and put it into some condensed material. Yeah.
So in the beginning of the book, you talk about how you were at your desk and your work mentor, Dave, drops this Macintosh in front of you. And that was kind of like your first experience with a Mac. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. That was, so I did not have really any experience with Apple. My brother was a big Apple user. And to me, it was like, you know, that's way more than I can go out there and afford, right? As like a broke college kid, I can't afford that. I was building my own computers at that point on the Windows side for gaming and, you know, scraggling parts together to try and build stuff on the cheap, or buying a cheap laptop and installing Linux on it. Right. I did not have access to the Apple side of things. And I wasn't, you know, at the time didn't really describe myself as overly creative person. So I wasn't doing like art or anything like that, which is kind of what the Mac sort of excelled at least in my mind. Right. Was that's why you own a Mac. Right. Mm-hmm. Basically I had, someone, you know, drop a computer on my desk when I was doing incident response at a company. And they said, you know, we don't know what we're looking at here. Nobody really does. Could you do some research on how to respond when we think one of these is, you know, misbehaving? And, from there just kind of ran with it and feel like I sort of found a bit of a calling, right, to fill a niche space that, didn't have much documented on it.
Right. Yeah. So it's been a staggering 10 years since your last book, which was on incident response with more, reactive scenarios. And your new book, Threat Hunting macOS, is more proactive and provides a lot of proactive scenarios on endpoint security. So was this a sort of dichotomy between reactive and proactive done on purpose?
Yeah, a little bit. So the first book, which, you know, was titled OSX Incident Response and Scripting and Analysis, right? It was very much for a computer's acting weird, and you're then getting on it to pull all the artifacts you can off of it, right? And then analyzing those artifacts to try and tell a story of what's going on the computer. So that is maybe, you know, like 10 years ago, how security was handled. Like we were doing, you had to get access to that system in order to do analysis on it. And now, like so many different technologies have moved these artifacts to the cloud, right? Like almost everything you need access to is feeding real time into the cloud somewhere, where you then have to go like just traverse through all that data and find the interesting stuff, right? So over the years, the way that we do sort of incident response and security threat hunting, like it's all changed to be in the cloud. So this book was kind of, I think, complementary to that first one, just how technology has shifted over the years.
I can't even imagine.
And yeah. And I was in a role where I sort of just got to be a part of that shift and learn, you know, kind of the archaic way we did it, and still need to do it from time to time. And be on the front lines of as that shifted over to like real time analysis. So yeah. Pretty fun stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, and since then you've developed like a lot of different tools and applications. And in the book you refer to Sprite trees?
Sprite tree. So
yeah. So I've actually never heard of Sprite trees. And so I was going through the book, and you have a lot of demos in the book, like really good tutorials and stuff, and it mentioned Sprite trees a lot. So I was doing some research, and they're created using Apple's 2D game engine. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I sort of had this idea, like one of my early projects that I released open source called True Tree. And my biggest complaint about trying to do sort of incident response on Mac is in the Windows world, when you build like a process tree, you can often answer a lot of your questions through that process tree. What programs were opened by, you know, user double clicking, what programs were opened by other applications. A lot of the tree and the process hierarchy sort of answers those questions for you. On Mac, we have a very different experience, which I get into very early in the book, right? Due to the architecture and how it was kind of built, everything tends to have a single parent called LaunchD. So one of my early passion projects was figuring out how to actually correlate processes to tell a better story of how other processes opened and apps came to be on the system. And that should, in theory, help any forensic analyst trying to answer questions. SpriteTree was a passion project I had with a couple of friends, Matt Schott and Maggie Zernhelt. The three of us sort of had this goal to be able to take like a telemetry log off macOS and load it into a visualizer that was built using the Apple Game Engine. And I didn't really know where I'd take that at the time. I knew it was going to be helpful for me and my team and myself. We use it for kind of learning how the operating system works and for building detections and looking at event correlation. I thought, I kind of thought it'd be a good opportunity to basically teach others by using that same sort of that same app. And teach others how to use it basically to learn the same way that I have. So that's what the book focuses on when it comes to like the lab material. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a way to take in a bunch of different streams of data and just like have a way to visualize it.
Yeah. So, ES Logger is, like a command line tool built into Mac, where if you want to look at many different events occurring, let's say you want to hook into processes that are being created, you want to see files that are being renamed, you want to see XPC like apps that are communicating with each other, you have the option to view all that in very large JSON chunks using a tool called ESLogger. And you can sort of just print in real time as these events are happening on your computer. A lot of other operating systems have always had, you know, nice ways to sort of view that data. It took Apple a while to get there. We had a lot of really sort of jankety ways to do that in the past, but endpoint security, or the endpoint security API, is Apple's solution to getting that kind of visibility now. And it's quite a can of worms. Once you start looking, it's, like your options are kind of limitless in terms of what you want to go on to do with that info security wise. But yeah, you can take, basically kind of a real time dump of information off a computer and then load it into our visualizer, called SpriteTree. Yeah. There is another tool out there, and it's actually very beginner friendly, I would argue, if you're looking to get into endpoint security. And that would be Mac Monitor, by Brandon Dalton. I think it might still to date sort of be owned by Red Canary. And that's like a free tool where you can just, it's like a point and click tool. What events do you want to see? You can export that data to, open in SpriteTree as well. So, yeah, we're getting some kind of, third party, some others outside of just myself sort of supporting the tool too and whatnot. So, yeah.
No, that's awesome. And that's just how the community is, like these tools don't exist and people go out and build them and they make them open source and it's great. Like another name that comes to mind is Patrick Wordle. I have so many of his definitely applications running. Yeah.
Yep. Patrick Wardle in the Objective-C SEE, right, website.
Yes.
Patrick's a good friend, and he creates many tools for the community from the security side. If you're looking to just get visibility into what's happening on your Mac, most people, if you're familiar with the Mac security community, you're familiar with Patrick's website, or should be. Let me put it that
way. Yes, So if I can just offer some praise about the book, because it was on my reading list for 2025. I was really anticipating it, and I'm really excited it's here. I haven't finished it, so it's also going to be on my reading list for 2026. But I love where I've gotten now. I love like how you lay out a lot of the hands-on exercises and like the topics, because you don't over-explain things that make the reader feel dumb. But you also the book is also like very technical in nature, so it like does one of the best jobs I've seen at explaining what exactly is going on without making you like totally bored.
Oh, Man, well, sense. I appreciate that. I greatly appreciate that, because that was definitely a bit of my goal, right? There's often, like, if you're trying to dive super deep into like how the operating system works, that tends to get really dry, right? And it's awesome.
Yes.
And there's books on that. And I've read through a lot of them, and they've scoped a lot of my view on the operating system in general. Jonathan Levin's books, for example, OS Internals, like, it's really valuable material. And a lot of people in the community have gone through those books, but it is intense, right? And the goal was to kind of, from the security side, we don't need a super in-depth look at how everything is working, unless we're also maybe engineering tools, right? Really, we need to know how to take the data available that the system offers and come up with solutions and discoveries for threats that exist, right? And that doesn't always come with being an expert on the internal side, but it comes with needing some of that knowledge to some extent, right? So my goal was to try and hit a happy medium for those that are maybe coming from the Windows side and don't fully understand a Mac and don't want to take the years of diving that it takes to learn some of the more important parts. So but thank you for that. Yeah. I really appreciate that. That was part of my goal. So
oh, that's awesome. So at the end of each chapter in the book, too, you conclude with like a little anecdote or a story. And I just have to ask you, are there any interesting ones that you can elaborate further on for listeners?
When we come across a topic in the book that's kind of like this detail might not seem that important, but here's why I'm telling you. That's kind of what the From the Frontline story is for, right? Is usually I'll include something in there like, yeah, this is a minor detail about the operating system, but here's why, you know, it's kind of relevant. Like, there could be, you know, it could be a story about extended attributes, or it could be a story about resource fork. That's what I'm thinking. So it could be a story about resource forks on Mac OS. Resource forks are a way to basically include an image, like, with your file. And when you move that file across Macs, it'll hold the same image, right? Now, that inside that resource fork, which is fairly invisible to the user from the user perspective, you could also, it doesn't have to be a picture. You can put anything you want there, right? So one thing that we'd seen attackers doing is basically they'd like include some app that looks harmless, but that app ultimately would reach inside of its own resource fork and pull out malware and install it. So it came packaged with the malware, but unless you were looking directly at its resource fork, you wouldn't see that malware. It's kind of a way to sort of make it a bit more invisible to the user. So, you know, small details about this is a little tidbit about the operating system, doesn't seem super important. So here's a story to back up why it is kind of important to understand.
Now, to sort of shift gears to the Jamf Security 360 report from 2025, there's a lot of really interesting findings that you guys put in this. Most interesting to me is that you guys, for the first time ever, detected more info stealers than adware across Jamf customers. It accounted for over 28% of detections, which isn't totally surprising, but it's pretty significant.
Yeah, info stealers have been explosive. You would, if you go back and look, I think even in 2024, like, that number was rising, right? Like, historically, historically on probably almost any platform, if you're including it in your list, like, adware is very high on the list in terms of something that just pops up everywhere, right? And that's been no exception on Mac. Mac has been plagued with various adware for years. But the big kind of breakthrough from the perspective of malware is that info stealers, like, over the years are just multiplying. For those, maybe the listeners that aren't super familiar with info stealers, is basically like instead of trying to get a backdoor on your system, somebody's doing sort of a smash and grab operation, right? Where they convince you to open an app that's probably looks like a real app, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. And instead of opening, it sort of just crashes, but in the background, like it was running logic that was just running off with your keychain, running off with your Google Chrome cookies, running off with any wallet information it could find for crypto, right? Mm-hmm. This sort of action is happening a lot. And users are falling for this left and right. One of the biggest problems is that we see developers falling for these info stealers constantly. And developers, often in their keychain and in their cookies, hold very valuable credential information that usually gives them, you know, that usually like in the hands of someone evil could provide very bad access, even supply chain problems. A lot of what's going on sort of behind the scenes with these info stealers, is there's different forums where, these different sort of cybercrime rings are trading off these credentials and access to certain companies and selling off, you know, access to certain companies. So, this problem that's rising, in attempts and also rising in success, is, you know, something that we've been battling, for a while at this point.
Right. And so we know that info stealers are becoming, or if not already, the most popular form of malware. Do you have any theories or ideas on why this is?
I think that from an attacker perspective, it is probably, and from a cybercrime perspective, it probably does tend to pay out better than like adware would, right? I'm taking some guesses here. Like I don't have a lot of behind the scenes of how much money's going in, you know, cyber criminals' pockets for these types of things. But you figure you can sell access to a certain company or a certain individual at a certain company. And that's worth a pretty penny, right? Especially mm-hmm. if you have a market and a place in which you can do that. I think also, you know, it's not just cybercrime where we're seeing that. A lot of info stealers are being used by APT groups as well. The DPRK, for example, in most of the malware that we catch by them, or at least most of the major malware that they tend to drop, has kind of a first line of maliciousness that it does, where they sort of run their own info stealer. So it's not just cyber crime groups. It's also the major, you know, APT players, that have picked up on like, hey, like maybe there is some value to just stealing everything as fast as possible off the system, in case we lose a connection or something like that. Right. So, there's reasons it's exploded in terms of usage.
Yeah, you mentioned the DPRK, and it reminds me of the Beavertail malware that was in the headlines last year, where North Korean threat actors were trying to get potential job interviewers or job seekers to download what they thought was a Zoom or Teams application, but really a malicious app.
Yeah, that's been a problem, and definitely one of the major moves by that specific APT actor is convincing developers, usually in the crypto industry, right, that they have some type of job available for them. They reach out on LinkedIn. They provide like a very convincing, hey, if you can solve this coding challenge, we'll give you twice as much money as you're making now, right? Like, and we'll come hire you. And then you open that coding challenge, and you know, when you build it, like in the background, there's like a C# like build file that runs a little backdoor in the background, right? And now, like, sure, you've completed the coding challenge, but you've also backdoored your system, and it's right. possible that's even your work system, right? Like,
without even being aware. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And it's a big move by that threat actor, and they've found success in that, probably likely because they're being so targeted. They're using a human interface, right? Even though it's over chat, it's over LinkedIn. It feels very personal. It feels like you've built a relationship with someone that's going to offer you a job. But, in reality, somebody that had no intention of doing so.
We're running a little short on time, but I just want to conclude this conversation by getting your 2026 outlook and predictions, of what we can see more of this year. You know, AI, info stealers, adware, Apple notarized malware. Give me your hot takes, Jaron.
Yeah, for 2026, I would suspect, my guess is going to be that info stealers continue. Apple is finding more ways to shut those down through some of the hacky techniques they use. But if, you know, history's taught us anything, it's when a new protection feature gets built, the next step is generally attackers find a way to get around it, right? So we'll continue monitoring that. But I suspect we keep seeing new forms of info stealers and new forms of creativity for how those info stealers get onto victim systems.
Are you concerned at all about AI, about threat actors using AI for running scripts?
Oh yeah, and we've seen some of that already, right? Like especially with the way in which a lot of these again, info stealers are kind of an easy example of this. Some of the ways they change so quickly, right? Like or a single sample that exists all of a sudden looks wildly different the next day after, you know, somebody did a blog post that it was detected, right? Like. That's not all human. Like AI is speeding up that process, right? So it's definitely powerful in the hands of the attacker. It's powerful in the hands of the defender as well, right? Like we can build detections and do tooling significantly faster than we were able to in the past. And yeah, that's it's a hard debate. Of who's it more valuable to, the attacker or the defender? I think there's merit to both sides, but I think regardless, we could tell that both sides are kind of benefiting from it, and that that unfortunately includes the attackers.
That was a conversation with Jaron Bradley, an author, security researcher, and director at Jamf Threat Labs. You can pick up his new book, Threat Hunting macOS: Mastering Endpoint Security, on Amazon or on his website. themittenmac.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this first episode of the 9to5 Mac Security Byte podcast with Jaron. I truly think that he is a leader in this field, and I am so grateful to have him on as a first guest. If you're interested in all things macOS, iOS, Apple security, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you're listening. I will see you guys later this month for another episode. Peace.